Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Daniel Howitt's interview with the director of the Oscar-nominated documentary short film, Nai Nai and Waipo, Sean Wang.
I'm 我们每天的生活没有什么特别的。你知道我们今天要做什么吗？你来跳舞。是。嗯。枪。是。痛苦的过一天跟 快乐的各一天是同样的一天，所以我要选择快乐。嗯，怎么那么臭啊？大姐，你有没有放屁啊？
Hey, Daniel.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. It's such a pleasure to chat with you. I know the website Next Best Picture quite well, so cool to get to chat with you.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm glad glad you've heard of us. We have been dying to talk with you, after seeing Nai Nai and Waipo, and then Didi, man, I have just been.
Thank you so much. Have you seen the feature?
I did. Yeah, yeah. Wow. I didn't attend Sundance, but luckily it was an online title, so I got to see it there. So yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, thrilled, man. I'm going to kind of hold my tongue on Didi. I really want to talk to you about the feature, but we'll save that. Yeah. Hopefully we can chat later on in the year when that comes out and we'll chat about that. But few weeks you've had, a month or two.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, obviously your first feature premiered at Sundance the same week that you got the Oscar nomination. Has this been overwhelming? Has it been like, were you kind of ready for something like this? Like, how have you been feeling the past month or two?
Overwhelming is definitely a good word to describe it, but it's not bad, not in a bad way. You know, certainly not in a bad way. Like, are you kidding me? But it's definitely just like thrust into so much new, you know, all at once. Like you were saying, I think premiering my first feature at Sundance and, you know, selling the movie at Sundance and winning the audience award and the special jury prize, that in and of itself would have been like too much to fully process. And then getting nominated for an Oscar and having this whirlwind experience with my family, with my grandmothers, that in and of itself is its own like, holy crap, what is happening moment. To have both of them happen at the same time is just kind of like, it's something I say it out loud and I don't even believe it. It's really a dream. Yeah.
That's awesome. How was the Oscars luncheon? Any incredible moments or like conversations you're not going to forget anytime soon?
That, okay, yeah. I mean, it's like going to something like that with my grandmothers is so insane, you know, cause they have no idea who any of these people are. And meanwhile, I'm like, oh my God, there's Greta Gerwig or there's Steven Spielberg. I got to meet Greta. She's so cool. And I told her about DD. Cause you know, I was like very much inspired by Lady Bird too and her ethos about it. I met Steven Spielberg, got a photo with him. My grandma was sitting, one of them, they split up the grandmas, but one of them was sitting at the same table as Hoyte, von Hoytema, who shot, you know, Oppenheimer and all these other amazing movies. And I was just laughing at the idea that I was like, man, she is sitting next to a legend and she has no idea. Like, no clue.
Was there anybody that they did know, like anybody at all that they knew that they like were excited to meet?
They were really excited to meet Janet Yang, the president of the Academy. They didn't know who she was beforehand, but, you know, they were at this event, and I think a lot of people were sort of talking to them, but I think they probably process it as like people are talking at us because we don't understand. They're speaking English. And before they got onto the red carpet, we kind of took a picture with Janet, and Janet was like speaking to them in Chinese. And so they all of a sudden it felt very familiar, and they were like, oh my God, you speak Chinese. And they were like, oh, you look so beautiful. And they were speaking in Chinese and just being like, oh, like, who are you? Blah, blah. And meanwhile, I'm like, grandmas, that's the president of the Academy. So it felt both like so personal and familiar. At the same time, it was like, we're on the red carpet at the Oscars luncheon, with, you know, so cool.
Wow. Well, let's talk about the film itself.
Yeah.
I loved it so much, man. I understand you shot it back in 2021. And I know you filmed videos with just short films in general and films with your grandmothers before this. But where did this specific short get started for you? Like, what was the initial idea that you had?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going back to some like random skits or shorts. Back in 2018, I had made this like, I call it a Christmas card. It's like a 1 minute video where, I don't know if you've seen it, Daniel, but it's like a silly, chaotic video where basically they try to feed me blueberries. I say no, and they slap me, tie me up, spank me. They're like drinking, like taking shots and lighting stuff on fire, and like, you know, just chaos. And then they bury me in the backyard, and it says happy holidays. And in a weird way, that is like now the proof of concept for an Oscar nominated short film, which is so stupid and silly to me. But there was something there, I thought, that was so, you know, vibrant and fun and joyful making that with them. And we shot it in like 2 hours. And knowing that, I was like, there's something here. There's actually something that is so like fun about these two. There's like, it's like, it was like collaborative in a way. And so in the back of my head, I knew I always wanted to make something else. Like, there was something that like we hadn't fully uncovered in a way that was like, there's something special about these two. There's more here. And in the spring of 2021, I had moved home to the Bay Area where my two grandmothers live and where I'm from. And it was kind of a transitional period in my life. I had basically moved home to then move back to Los Angeles to be closer to my collaborators, people like Sam Davis, who shot the movie and produced it with me, and a lot of, you know, other people I work with. And it was the first time in like an incredibly long time that I got to really spend time with my grandmothers, you know, living under the same roof as them for months and months and months on end, and getting to kind of see them in their sort of day-to-day tasks and their sort of the mundane rhythms of their life, like seeing Waipo wash the dishes. And that was, you know, sort of coupled with me being in the room. And then all of a sudden we get into like a dance party and they're like spanking me, that very silly childlike energy. That was all kind of juxtaposed with a lot of the anti-Asian hate crimes that were happening in our country at the time, but especially in the Bay Area, like where I'm from, where they live. So it kind of felt so close to home, all these things that I was reading about in the news, to people who looked like my grandmothers and people in our community. And I mean, there was this, I was like, how, like, you spend 10 minutes with my grandmothers, and I was like, who would punch them in the face? Like, they're so lovable. They're full of so much joy. And that humanity that they have, I felt like was something that I felt like was missing in all these articles about, you know, people like them being victimized. And I really just wanted to kind of capture that, create something that was a container for all of that joy and silliness and youthfulness that I felt, a lot of that humanity, you know, like the wide range of human emotions that someone like that, like the two of them, really have. And so that was kind of the North Star, you know. It was, okay, well, can we take that Christmas card energy that is full of that vibrant youthfulness and capture that with the sort of quotidian, very patient rhythms of their life, and have those two in a film that also doesn't ignore the pain of their lives and the melancholy and the loneliness of aging, and have it all fit in the same movie without it feeling like whiplash. like tonal whiplash, not Whiplash the movie.
Was there in capturing, you know, I know that you set up a lot of the skits for them, but a lot of the in the mundane moments, just capturing these moments of their lives, was there anything that surprised you about your grandmothers, either something that you saw in their rhythms or anything that they said that maybe you just didn't expect?
I mean, there's like sort of little things that to me are like some of my favorite moments in the film, but I think to a lot of people it's probably nothing. But like a lot of the times for shots, we would just roll the camera for like 10 minutes, you know, and just sort of see if they, you know, almost like forget we're here. We'd roll the camera and just kind of like walk away and see if anything surprised us or like what happens when they forget the camera is there. I remember we were filming a shot of them brushing their teeth in the morning and they're sharing a sink and Waipo just takes out her dentures and starts brushing her teeth. And to me, I don't know, that to me is so funny, you know, because like, I'm like, oh, I guess that's part of her daily routine. Like I brushing, literally brushing your teeth, but like not in the way that we do it. So stuff like that, you know, little details, but also obviously this is not in the context of what you're asking, but like the stuff of the interviews of like talking about their histories and their past and the more painful parts of their lives. Obviously I knew the broad strokes, but really getting to like dive in deep and having those conversations with them, I think were really meaningful, hard, but meaningful to like have heard it from them.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Yeah, those moments are so powerful, like you said, especially juxtaposed with the silly stuff. It lands so well. They just seem so game to do all this ridiculous stuff. Was there anything you tried to get them to do that they were like, all right, no, that's where I draw my line. We're not doing that.
No. Which probably means we didn't go far enough. We should have really pushed this MPAA rating.
That's awesome. Is Superbad a movie that they would be watching if you hadn't put it on for the film?
Maybe. It was funny. Like how that all happened was we actually had kind of like we're done. We were like wrapping. Sam had to leave. And that was kind of, you know, the container for this movie was like, okay, well, just come. We'll shoot for, I think we could afford a camera. And Sam had to go off to another shoot. So we had 9 days and we're like, let's just, whatever we get in these 9 days, we'll figure it out. Like we know the North Star, but we'll figure it out as we go. And we were kind of done, but I had the camera for, you know, a couple more days while Sam left. And we were watching Superbad, Sam and I. And just kind of like, all right, let's just chill. Like, wow, we haven't watched it in a while. And we were watching it. And then we just left it playing. And we went into another room and we were like prepping something and he was looking at flights. And then my grandmothers came in and sat down and started watching it. And that happens a lot, actually, you know, when I think back or like I'll be watching something, I'll leave it on and then they'll end up watching this very American TV show that they do not understand. But Nai Nai loves to read the subtitles and try to follow along with the English, even though she doesn't have any idea what they're saying. And that's kind of what happened here. You know, we left Superbad on and they came in and just started watching it. And they were like, you could watch them react. They're just like, oh. And then they're talking to one another, like, why did he do that? Like, what is going on? And then Nai Nai just being like, oh, like, fuck. And I'm like, just like reading this stuff. And Sam and I were just watching them watch Superbad for like 20 minutes. And we were like, should we? That was pretty great.
That's so good. Well, yeah, I wanted to hear about working with Sam. I mean, there are so many things about this short that set it apart. Lots of things, but style is certainly one of them as well. This movie is just so incredibly cinematic. The images are beautiful. So yeah, tell me about working with Sam as both producer and cinematographer, and how you guys developed the look and feel for the short.
Yeah, I mean, going back to just like, it was so organic. And I think the thing with Sam too, as a cinematographer, he's gonna blush hearing me say this if he ever hears this, but I think he has such a gift of taking things that are very seemingly ordinary, taking like seemingly small stories and making them feel so cinematic and larger than life. Like he has such a way of making that intimate warmth and tenderness feel like a big screen experience. I think that's obviously what we were trying to do here with this movie, but I think across everything he shoots, but also everything he writes and does as a filmmaker, you know, Sam, in addition to being a great cinematographer, is also like a great filmmaker in his own right. And so that's kind of the great thing about working with him too, is that me and him both are very, I think, holistic filmmakers. Like we both have a background in editing as well. And, you know, we often sound design a lot of our own films, but like then we'll work with the sound designers. But like we know the way that sound affects images. And so him as a cinematographer, he's not precious about the most beautiful shot wins. He's like, well, the best shot that serves the story wins. And yeah, working with this on hit with him too, like he's able to do a lot with no lights. Like you see in this movie, he lit this movie with a cracked mirror that shattered halfway through production. And he's able to do a lot with, you know, a lot of toys and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, the look of it came from the tone that we wanted, which was this sort of warmth, nostalgic sort of, I had this idea of like, we're creating a time capsule. We wanted it to feel like we were trapping this moment in time. And that kind of informed the 4:3 aspect ratio and informed a lot of the locked off shots. It almost felt like we're capturing portraits of these people. But yeah, and I think working with him as a producer on this film too, it didn't really feel any different than anything we've done in the past. But, you know, oftentimes Sam's the first person to read something I write. He's the first person to spitball ideas with me. And so this movie was so small. It was really like our production crew was like 4 people. And so we were all wearing a lot of hats. And so in that sense, yeah, it was just kind of producers make it happen. It was just kind of like 3 people who willed this into existence. It was me, Sam, and our third producer, Malcolm.
And you wore a lot of hats as well, edited the film as well. How long did that process take? Like, where did you have a good idea of what it was going to look like after you guys wrapped shooting?
I mean, it took a long time to edit. It took 2 years almost to edit, not because like it was a full-time thing, but it was because, you know, I was doing other things in between, and then I would come back to this and trying to figure it out. But again, I think going back to that idea of like, the answer is no. I think we knew what we had was special. We knew that while we were shooting, I felt something I didn't really feel in other projects oftentimes, where it's like the stuff we were shooting, I was like, it was almost different than most things, where other things I've done, I'm like, I know how this is going to cut together, but I'm not sure if it'll like work, if it'll have that spark. And this one was almost the opposite, where it was like, I feel that spark while shooting. Like what we're getting is really special. I have no idea how it's going to cut together. And so it was kind of that became the challenge with the edit, was, you know, cause it's not a very linear story. And I think we kind of went in not really knowing what the structure was going to be, but we figured it out while we were shooting too. Like when we shot the opening shot of the movie, that was probably day 3 of shooting. And I remember shooting it and looking at Sam and kind of being like, I think that's the opening shot of the movie. And so as my editor brain kind of kicks in and sort of, I knew what the opening shot of the movie was. And then they were like, okay, we're going to have to introduce these 2 women. So there's probably going to be like an opening montage. And we knew what the ending shot of the movie was. When we shot it, it was like, oh, that's the ending shot of the movie. So all of a sudden it was like, okay. And those were the first 2 things I cut together. It was like, okay, we have our opening and we have our closing. And I think these work really well on their own. Well, then how do we weave the everything else in between. So it doesn't, so the roller coaster feels natural to get to a place of talking about farts and talking about death. So in that sense, it was like, okay, we're figuring out the structure, but we knew the opening and the ending. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think we would have kept editing it forever, but we submitted to South by Southwest and got in, and we were like, there's our deadline.
That's awesome. I want to hear about showing it to your grandmothers for the first time. Did you make them wait for an audience, or did you show it to them before anybody else did? Like, what was their kind of reaction?
I showed them a rough cut first, because like I said, we edited it over the course of 2 years. And I think like the week after we shot, they were like, so when is it done? Can we see it? And I was like, I haven't even, what? And so they were very patient with me to, you know, get the film to a place where it was actually showable. And, you know, they, you know, I showed them like a year and some months after we shot it. And so I was like, I'm not going to make them wait any longer to get just a sneak peek. So I showed them a rough cut of the movie, which was, you know, more or less the movie, just longer and bad pacing. Not that they know, but, and they loved it. They already loved it. And they were kind of like, I think they felt too seen in a way. They were like, that was amazing, but like too many wrinkles, you know, too many close-ups. They're like, their words are like, we're so ugly. And I was like, you're not ugly. You're so beautiful. And then we got to, you know, they couldn't come to South by Southwest, but we've screened it in SF Film and in a sold out crowd. And they got to come to that and watch it with, like, you know, the audience laughter. And it was so special.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, I wish we could chat longer. Before I let you go, you know, obviously I know you filmed this before filming your feature, but was there anything that you learned specifically on this one? I know you filmed a lot of things, but specifically on Nine Eye and WIPO, was there anything that helped you in your process as you went to shoot Didi?
I mean, clearly casting, you know, Waipoa, for, I guess, listeners, Waipoa has a role in DD, a big role, actually. She plays the grandmother. I mean, yeah, you know, I think Sam and I kind of went into DD with this language of the movie that was like, there's obviously scenes, but like, there's going to be moments. We're weaving so many different, like, styles with the internet and like mixed media, and we were like, the movie should also have this language that is a little hodgepodge, that is sort of reminiscent of Nai Nai and Waipoa, that sort of can hop between all these different worlds. And so we really tried to bring in this sort of documentary spontaneity that we had on Nai Nai and Waipoa into Didi, which I think we accomplished maybe like half of what we thought we could, just because, like, you know, we were like, oh, we can't turn the camera that way. There's a truck. So, you know, we learned that it's harder than it seems when you have that many people on set. But I think we got there. You know, I think that energy that DD has, that sort of overwhelming, in-your-face, hodgepodge, chaos, was something that I think we kind of borrowed from Nai Nai and Waipoa. Also the grounded stuff too, but yeah, a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I hope we can chat more about the feature later in the year when it comes out. Sean, thank you so much for your time. And man, thank you for both of these films, because I'm really a huge fan.
Thank you, Daniel. I appreciate that. Thank you for the time.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Daniel Howitt's interview with the director of Nai Nai and Waipo, Sean Wang, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. Nai Nai and Waipo is up for your consideration at this year's Academy Awards for Best Documentary Short Film. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you all so much for listening, as always, and we will see you all next time.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death of a Film Star. Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.